was he wearing? Well, he produced, he was wearing a red Argyle sweater and tan trousers and red shoes. Hmm? No, he's not retarded.
Hello and welcome to another Surviving Grady podcast. My name is Red. Denton is still on that secret project off the Alaska pipeline, so he won't be with us today. However, we are joined by someone who is very, very awesome, but we'll get to that in a second. We are continuing our series, which we are calling Talking to People About 2004, and very appropriately, as the title suggests, we are talking to people about 2004, the Red Sox 2004 season. It is the 10-year anniversary of the 2004 World Series victory, the thing that we never thought we'd see in our lifetimes that we finally saw. So to commemorate that, we're talking to people, ordinary Boston folk like you and me, perhaps slightly more awesome folk, but ordinary folk nonetheless, about 2004 and some of their personal memories from the low light of 2003 to the highlights of 2004. And today, we are very happy to be joined by Angie C. That's DJ Angie C to you, who you will know from most famously from 101.7 FNX, the much lamented, now gone 101.7. It is gone, isn't it? I mean, does it exist?
Oh, it's very gone.
It's gone. Okay. When you left, they said, shut it down. DJ Angie C has left the house. Let's just knock it all down. But I will not hesitate to refer to her as a Boston radio legend. Obviously, you know the voice from 101.7 FNX, now heard on 100.7 ZLX. And that's really where I think most of the audience from FNX and BCN have kind of migrated to. First of all, there are only like really three radio stations these days anyways, right? And FNX is like the best of them, correct? More or
right.
Less?
Well, all the there are six stations that play pretty much the exact same music, which
right.
is, you know, sort of like a top 40, you know, thing. And then, yeah, there's ZLX and a couple others. But as far as like hearing music with the guitars in it, we're pretty much it.
Excellent. Everything else is programmed by robots. You want to listen to robot music, you go to those other stations. You want to listen to music with a really hot DJ voice and someone who knows their music and plays good stuff, you listen to DJ NGC on 100.7. But anyways, somehow we have conned the brilliant and beautiful NGC to spend some time talking about the 2004 Red Sox and the madness of 2003 and the eventual uplift of 2004. But Angie, I do appreciate your time, so I thank you for joining us today.
Well, I was promised cookies, but thank you. I'm here.
We do. Those will be coming. That's actually what Denton is. When he's not here at Surviving Grady HQ, he's out, which is actually the most quiet aisle of the Best Buy in Quincy. That's where we are right now. You can find him out there delivering stuff. So he'll be by shortly with the cookies. My advice to you is when he knocks, don't let him in.
Okay.
But that's your choice. Anyways, thank you very much for your time. And as
thanks
I
for having me.
It's certainly our pleasure. But we have it's hard to believe that 10 years have passed since the Red Sox won the World Series in 2004. And it is something that a lot of us, certainly me, thought we would never get to see in our lifetimes. But personally, I think what makes 2004 so awesome is the fact that 2003 was just a Hindenburg shit show for the fucking ages. I mean, it was the crash and burn ending that I mean, literally, it was all of us running, Charlton Heston blowing up the world at the end of Beneath the Planet of the Apes. I mean, it was everything horrible that you dream about happening right then and there. I have written extensively about my experiences in 2003, the infamous Aaron Boone game, and how I spent it in a hellacious New Jersey hotel, pacing around a room and just waiting for the world to collapse in flames around me. But I will ask you, DJ Angie C, where were you? Would you please tell us, share with us, with a listening audience that contains at least four of my relatives, would you please tell us where you were when the Sox lost the 2003 ALCS on that Aaron Boone home run? Can I ask you to go back to the dark recesses of your mind and tell us, please, and tell us where were you and what horrors, how did you deal with the horror as it unfolded?
I was in Las Vegas.
Nice.
Believe it or not.
Hopefully not betting on the Sox.
No. I had relocated via the Witness Protection Program from Boston to Las Vegas in like mid-2002.
Gotcha.
And by 2003, I was newly married, and working for the Bellagio, believe it or not, and was in a Las Vegas bar with all Boston people that now lived in Vegas. No matter where I've lived outside of Boston, Red Sox fans find each other.
Yes.
like family. And so we were all at a bar that we knew was a Boston-friendly bar. In Las Vegas, there are no teams, as you know.
Right.
So that every bar is affiliated with a particular team. So you sort of find, you know, the Red Sox bar, the, you know, Green Bay Packers bar, the Patriots bar, like whatever it is. You find it, you lock on, and that's kind of where you go when you live in Vegas.
Interesting.
So we were at a Boston-friendly, and we, you know, it was like that kiss of the sister kind of thing. Like, you're just so close and you think like you finally dare to dream, you know, and you're at that moment and then it all gets taken away. And I was literally left on my knees in the bar.
I guess as Stan Lee would say, enough said.
It was kind of a fancier bar, and there was like a lounge area that was carpeted with a huge, you know, wall, big screen.
So it was on your knees friendly is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
I was on my knees
friendly. Gotcha.
But I was quite literally like when, you know, as that moment, if you will, was happening, I was quite literally on my knees, like screaming no, just like they do in the movies. You know what I mean? And we were all just like, I can't, you know, it was just shock, dismay, heartbreak. It was, you know, 80 years of heartbreak. That stuff's in our DNA, you know?
It is. We're all hardwired. It was just it is a horrible thing. And it's, and you don't, and I suppose people who follow other teams, everyone has their crosses to bear. Everyone has that little deep, dark part of themselves that they don't, talk about at parties. But I do think that it was, I don't think it's outrageous to say it was like losing a loved one. It was, I try to explain how bad it was, and I was in New Jersey, and I remember having to come back on a train to Boston, and I just sat on the, there's a reason no one sat within five rows of me on that train. I mean, it was, part of it was I didn't have pants on, but the other part of it was that, I mean, I think people looked at it and there's something wrong with this guy. But it was a different kind of, I get that vibe a lot, but this was a different kind of something wrong. I mean, it was devastating to me, and it was, and I think I came out of that thinking not only was the event itself devastating, but I think, and tell me if you felt the same way, I think after 2003, after that Game 7 of the ALCS, there was a real feeling of, well, it's never going to happen for us.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because, that was it. We were never going to get that close again. It was, you know, the boys that will always build you up and break your heart and twist that knife at the last second. And it was like, here we go again.
It was awful. And we kept thinking, you know, and all you heard about in the media was Pedro, you know, Pedro ain't getting any younger. I mean, every year it was, you know, he's this much further along. We only have a little bit of time to ride him and get this performance out of him. And he's the guy we got to have leading the charge. And it was, I agree. It was just, it was a real Call the Samaritans moment. It was really bad for me. Would you, as a Red Sox fan, I think you already have. You pretty much consider that your lowest point. That's the lowest ebb of your existence as a Red Sox fan.
Well, I have to say, when Buckner, you know, God, it's still even hard for me to say that out loud. Do you know what I mean? Even
gotcha.
After all these years, like, we don't speak. We don't say the word Buckner in this house. when the incident happened,
gotcha.
I was on the phone with a very cute boy. I believe I was, you know, I was in high school, obviously. And we were, you know, because this is before social media, so we were on the phone as opposed to live tweeting an event.
Gotcha.
And watching the game together. And I was really getting somewhere with this guy, you know, like it was going to happen. I was close to closing the deal and getting asked out, you know.
It wasn't Jim Rice, was it?
No, just, yeah, you know, this kid in my high school. And he was a huge Red Sox fan. And of course, you know, I was brought up in a house that, you know, I mean, I'm Irish, I'm Italian, and I'm a Red Sox fan.
There you go.
And, you know, that was something that was given to me at birth. And, you know, leading up to that moment, it was fairly consistent, and we're on the phone, and Buckner lets the ball through his legs, And the cue boy goes, there was just like dead silence. And the cue boy goes, I gotta go. And I hung up the phone and I knew I was never gonna date that kid. He was never gonna ask me out and the Red Sox were never gonna fucking make it.
Did you ever see him again is the even more important question.
Well, we went to the same school, but yes, it was over. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
that was...
So that's when I left. You know, you have that, I think, as Red Sox fans, even though we're indoctrinated at birth, there are times when we leave the church, if you will.
Gotcha.
To go off and find ourselves. And that was a defining moment for me as a fan. I left and I went and spent my days at the Rat and the Channel. I did the punk rock music thing and just, you know, went headfirst into that whole lifestyle, which at that time in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, you kind of couldn't be both. So I went and down the rock and roll rabbit hole and didn't come back to the Sox until I moved away in 2002. Because that's the thing that happens when you leave Boston and you move outside of Boston, you miss it so much. And one of the easiest ways to get that sweet taste of home is through the Red Sox.
Gotcha.
So you find the bar, you know, you find your people and you can, you know, you miss the accents. I mean, there was a point when I was living in Los Angeles where I was watching the movie The Town over and over again. It's not that good of a movie, but I miss my townie boys, you know, and that was as close as I could come at the time. So, yeah. So I, you know, so in 2003, I had rekindled, my romance had been completely rekindled with the team.
Nice.
And it was that moment where you're like, do we dare to dream? Is this really going to happen? Oh my God. And why isn't he taking him out of the game? And what the fuck is going on? And you know, it's like that moment in Lord of the Rings where, you know, he catches the ring and he's all excited and he's like, my precious, you know, Gollum. And then he turns around and he's in the pit. I mean, I know that's kind of nerdy, but that's kind of where I was.
You actually just out-nerded me with the Lord of the Rings. I've never seen that, but I was going to make a comparison to Gwen Stacy dying, so I guess it's the same thing. You could have gone either way with that. It's really, yeah, it's the same thing. Let me ask you this. Here's a brief derail for a second. You mentioned the music and getting into that lifestyle. And, of course, obviously, a lot of people in Boston familiar with you in FNX, which was really one of the best radio stations. I mean, a lot of people, BCN gets all the press, but FNX was, I mean, in the late 80s, early 90s, and that was really what you listened to in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You spent a good chunk of your time, a lot of the events, and I'm being very assumptive here, but I know FNX would always say, this Saturday on Lansdowne Street. Of course, you guys had a lot of events there. I wasn't hip enough to actually go to those, and I didn't go to any of them. But any crossover, I mean, I'm thinking Fenway Park's right there, these events with booze and music going on right there. I'm just hoping there's a story of like a drunk Phil Plantier like stumbling into an FNX event or something like that.
Well, one of my favorite Fenway stories, because, you know, it was interesting because you do sort of make that conscious choice where you're going to be a punk rocker, or you're going to be, you know, at the rock shows and not necessarily get into the baseball thing. Back then, back now it's all inclusive and it's fine.
Right.
But back then there was a clear line in the sand. You were a jock or you weren't, you know? And so even though the Green Monster loomed, it was like being in another country sometimes.
Right.
And then every once in a while, the worlds would collide. And there was a point where Rancid and Rocket from the Crypt were playing at Avalon. And a lot of people were in town for the show. And many of the sort of record rep people from Epitaph were there, which was the label that Rancid, I believe they're still on, actually. And one of the guys decided that he really wanted to run the bases at Fenway. One of the guys that worked for Epitaph, and he was like this crazy, crazy punk rock guy that had been in the business for a long time. And I was like, well, I can't help you, you know? But we all stood there and he scaled the wall.
The Green Monster?
Yeah. He broke into Fenway and ran the bases while Rancid was playing on stage.
Gotcha.
Did not get caught. successfully came back, and so that so things like that happened.
Wow,
you know?
That's long before. Yeah. That's long before John Henry bought that he put in the robot drones, like to kind of monitor monitor the field at night to make sure that doesn't happen. It's interesting you say that though, because I can imagine some of the crowds lined up for some of the shows at, I don't know, whatever those clubs are for, Spit, some of those punk rock clubs on Lansdowne Street, and the Red Sox games getting out because. The
oh,
Red
it was
Sox,
a shit show.
You know,
it
Saturday
was a shit
night,
show.
Weekend games, you know, Saturday night game would probably end around 10:30, which is right around the time people start showing up for those clubs. So I can imagine the worlds colliding as you have these drunken Sox fans coming out and a bunch of guys with mohawks and spiked bracelets and stuff waiting to get in to see Rancid or God knows who.
Yeah, there was, like I said, there was a huge line in the sand and people did not get along. There were definitely problems. Like, you know, I paid very close attention to the Red Sox schedule, but it was more about parking on Lansdowne and how I was going to get in and out of the shows and how I was going to maneuver around the drunk Sox fans than it was about who are they playing, you know? I had left the church at this point, you know?
Well, we welcomed you. It's good to see that you eventually came back to the church. And,
I did. I mean, as much as devastating as 2003 was, the miracle of 2004 happened and just solidified. I mean, the fact that I'm back in Boston is, you know, sometimes I really can't believe it. But, you know, everything comes full circle, including being a Red Sox fan.
I think that was one of my favorite signs from – you saw a lot of interesting signs held up in the 2003 playoffs – and 2004, I should say. But one of my favorite was someone had a sign – and I put this up on the blog a couple of times. I got a screen cap of it. It's just someone holding a sign that says, just when I'm out – just when I think I'm out, they drag me back in. And that really was – it was very mafia-esque, that whole – I mean, it is that way anyways because it's like, you know, it's long been equated to that ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend who you swear off one day and the next day, you know, they bring you flowers or something. You're like, oh, this is fantastic. It was very mafia-esque. You really can't get out once you're in. You know, you can't. It's almost like a gravitational pull that brings you back.
Well, it is, but several miracles happened that year for me. And I took them, and I'm not a big, like, this is a sign, but these were big signs for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that, you know, not only was there the renewed faith of the team and things seemed to be going well, but two major, major things happened in 2004. One was the Pixies got back together.
Ah, okay. Excellent.
Which, you know, for people outside of that particular music genre and not knowing who the band is, you know, we might need to explain that that was never going to happen. I mean, you know, it was like the punchline to every joke, like, oh, so-and-so's getting back together. Too bad it's not the Pixies. Like, it was just, that was never, ever, ever going to happen. I mean, you know, we were told on many occasions that there was no way that band was ever getting back together. So when that happened, it was like, huh, isn't this interesting? And right around the same time, I had a child.
2004. Nice.
I gave birth to my one and only child, my daughter, Kendall, named after the Kendall Cafe in Kendall Square, Cambridge.
Nice. Thank God you weren't a frequenter of the Rathskeller. That would have been an awkward naming situation. So.
Well, we used to joke about that. She could have easily been named T.T. after T.T. the Bears. But luckily, her dad and I met at the Kendall, and all was right with the world.
There you go.
So my daughter was born in July of 2004.
Oh, wow.
And during the Sox series, during that game six, I had a picture of her in the Yankees series, not the, you know, because I really, really, it ended with the, you know, I mean, we've kind of talked about this. Like, the World Series championship was the gravy, the frosting, the cherry on the top of the whipped cream on the sundae, but it was really that Yankees series that was the defining moment of 2004,
Most certainly.
So, I mean, I'll get to that whole story in a minute, but yeah, there was a picture of my brand new daughter in a Red Sox uniform that I took with me to watch that game, and it sat on the bar as that game, you know, I mean, it was just a miracle.
That is awesome. So several things. So all these cosmic things, your daughter, Joey Santiago realizing he needs a job, things, all these things kind of converged, and suddenly you were able to see it coming together. You saw this kind of happening. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
But so we know that in 2003, when the ALCS Game 7, when that horrible thing happened, you were on your knees in a bar in Vegas.
Yes, quite literally.
And we don't ask
we
don't ask a lot of questions beyond that. But now let's fast forward to October. Let's take a year after that. Fast forward to October 2004. And we can talk a little bit about the ALCS in a second, because I agree with you. I think the ALCS was really – that almost was the World Series. The World Series itself was kind of anticlimactic. As awesome as it was, beating the Yankees was the thing. But where were you when they finally won the World Series?
I was in my living room in Las Vegas holding my three-month-old daughter, crying hysterically. you know, because at that point
– what a difference a year makes, let's just say.
I know, right? And at that point, by that game, you knew it was going to happen, even though you couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? Like, there's that moment where you're like, oh, my God, this is really happening. And my phone, I was just constantly on my phone crying. And it was, you know, friends from L.A., friends from Boston, friends from Vegas, all of us originally from Boston, of course. But one of the biggest moments was my dad calling. And I will totally get choked up while I'm telling you the story. Do not hold it against me.
We invite that. Let it out.
But there was that moment, and I'm crying, and I'm holding my daughter, and I'm watching, you know, the celebration on television. And my husband at the time was still at work. And my dad calls, and we can't even speak. You know, we're just so elated, and, you know, everyone's just screaming and crying, and he finally choked out the words, "I wish your grandfather was alive to see this." Aww. He waited his whole life and he never got to see this. And that was it.
And cue waterworks.
Oh yeah. But that was the thing, and that's I'm sure that you hear that a lot. That's a very common story. I mean, that, you know, our ancestors, you know, we're, you know, this many generations removed. I mean, I laugh when my daughter talks about the Red Sox and watches that team and talks about Poppy or whoever, and I'm like, you will never know the struggle. And I'm glad and I'm happy, and I call her my Sox miracle baby, but she will never know. And it's, you know, it's amazing for me to think about my grandparents that, you know, were lifelong diehard Red Sox fans, and they never got to see that moment. So it was almost even more important for you to take that moment in and enjoy it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because, and it's interesting you mentioned your grandfather and people from the past. I mean, my father passed in 06, but he got to see them win it in 2004. And I think now he'd almost – it would be like you know, like someone – like those science fiction movies where someone wakes up from the 1930s and they're looking at airplanes and blimps and what is this, flying machines? You know, right. It would be like that. I mean, to know that the Red Sox have won – it almost doesn't make sense to think that we're living in a world in which in the last 10 years – the Red Sox have won the World Series three times. It's unthinkable.
It's also like if you had told me at that moment that I would be sitting in Fenway Park at Game 6 last year watching them win at home for the first time in, what, 96 years or whatever it was, I definitely would not have believed you at all.
Now, you were at that game, and you did tweet a lot about it and talk a lot about it, and I want to stay in the past, but I will ask.
I'm sorry.
That must have been an absolute shit show. Was that game, did anyone sit down at all for that game?
There was a point very early on in the game where I was there with my best friend Kay Hanley, and there was a woman sitting two rows behind us, and we were in the bleachers, man, like, you know, right field, like way back.
Right.
And there was a woman in a wheelchair that was sitting two rows behind us. And the guy behind me tugs on my shirt and says, "Hey, listen, can you sit down? She can't see." And I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Great.
And I was like, "It's the last out." Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was just just like, no, I'm sorry. No, I cannot. This is game six of the World Series.
I can only imagine. You know? Yeah. I can only imagine what that was like. That must have been,
there was a lot of like, oh my God, is this really happening? I mean, you know that game. It was very surreal. The pickle. I mean, all these really bizarre moments that we were just like, is this really happening? Like, is this real? Like, there was a lot of pinching going on, believe me.
What have we done to deserve this embarrassment of riches?
It really was an embarrassment of riches. That's exactly what it was.
It is.
And to think that only 10 short years prior, I was on my knees.
It's just it is insane. It's through the looking glass. If anything, it's we're definitely living in magical times when these things happen.
Oh, these are the salad days, baby.
These are. It isn't. Some people joke. I'm saying it seriously. It is never going to get better than this.
No.
At least for me, this is the peak. Everything down here is the roller coaster is in the down position at this point. We're coasting. Talking about 2004 and. We did. You had mentioned the ALCS against the Yankees.
I think I said Game Six, but I meant Game Four. By the way,
Game Four of the World Series.
No. Game Four of the ALCS.
When everything started to turn.
Yes.
Gotcha.
That moment. That was the most important moment for me, I think.
Ah, okay.
Because that was. Can I tell the story? I mean,
please. Well, I was going to ask you, and go right ahead, because all I was going to say was, what point did you think our fortune was finally smiling on us? But it seems like that's what you're leading into here with this story.
It was absolutely that game. It was a convergence of you know, it was kind of epic how it all went down. I mean, obviously, by the time we get to Game Four, things are not looking good at all, and you think, here we go again, and. My in-laws were visiting from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, don't you know? When you live in Vegas, people are always visiting, you know, whether it's you or Vegas, like you're constantly running out to like casinos to hang out and say hi to friends or whatever.
Right.
So I had this interesting day where, I had, made meatballs for my father-in-law who loved them and, you know, I make the greatest meatballs in the world. So, I had made the meatballs. I had put the meatballs in the slow cooker so they could cook all day. And I took off to go meet my buddy Dennis White at the Bellagio Sportsbook to watch Game Four because he was in town. And he's a Quincy boy. So, you know, it was just the two of us at the sportsbook, at the bar at the sportsbook at Bellagio. I've got the picture of my brand new 3-month-old baby in the Red Sox uniform on the bar. And now I'm still a new mom and I'm breastfeeding. So I'm not drinking. I can't have anything to drink.
Gotcha.
You know? And it was the first time I had had any caffeine in a really long time.
There's a convergence of interesting things here. So,
yes. So, okay. So picture me very wired on Diet Cokes. and I can't touch my phone because it's the sports book and that's against the law in Las Vegas. You cannot touch your phone when you're near the betting area. So, you know, the game starts to turn and we start to go into extra innings and we it's that moment where you're like, oh my God, wait, what's happening? And I finally step away to take a phone call and my husband at the time, my brand new baby and my in-laws are all sitting at the house. I'm now like 2 hours late because I don't want to leave and I'm high as a kite on caffeine, right? And they're going, are you coming home? Because we'd really like to eat these meatballs. And I was like, are you watching this game? So I finally, you know, and Dennis was late for meeting people for dinner. And we're like, what do we do? You know, so we left and I got in the car and I turned the game on in the car. And they won the game right as I'm pulling in to my house.
Nice.
And I'm crying, hysterically crying, because I'm like, oh, my God. I cannot believe this is happening. This is our year. This is going to be it, you know? And I go in the house. And so now I've just spent the afternoon at a casino bar with a gent from Boston to walk in like I'm on a 2-day cocaine bender with all the caffeine. You know what I mean? and, you know, with three people who grew up in Sheboygan and don't get it. You know what I mean? And I'm like, did you see that game? You know.
Stand back. She's on the weed.
Like, it was crazy town crazy. But that was the moment. And I was just like, this is going to happen. You know? So that's my story.
I think the best that I can do to top that is I was sitting on a couch with Denton, and I didn't think it was going to happen until, keeping the prerequisite 5 feet of space between us, of course. But I didn't really know it was going to happen until game seven of the ALCS when Johnny Damon hit that grand slam. At that point, I said, this is it. We've taken enough shit. It's going to happen. So it took me to game seven. But I will say those were, you know, it's interesting because you were kind of on the 3-hour advantage end of things out where you were. Here, a lot of those games were ending late at night, early morning, and people were, I just remember my office. It was like something from the Omega Man. I mean, we were all just kind of walking around. You were afraid to talk about it because it seemed we were working with house money at that point. You know, won one game, then it was like, oh, just one more. First, it went from just give us one game so we don't get swept. Then it was let us win the next one at home so we can at least go back to Yankee Stadium with a couple of games under our belt. And then after that, it became, I just want this whole motherfucking thing. Just give us everything. I want to let us finally do this.
Yeah, and I think once that was over and once Damon hit that slam, it was like they, you know, gravy. There was no way you were going to stop that train.
No. I've said from day one that, well, not from day one, obviously, but since that happened, I've said that if the baseball gods came to you, if they came to you, Angie C., and said, look, if they came to you after that night, if they saw you on your knees in Vegas, in that bar in Vegas, that well-appointed bar in Vegas, and came to you and said, how do we make this up to you?
Yeah.
You would have said, I want to, the scenario that you came up with would have been exactly what happened in 2004 in the ALCS. I mean, it literally didn't get any better because it was the revenge fantasy we all wanted. I mean, that was the amazing thing.
Well, the only way it would have got better if it was actually for the series and somehow there was a league, you know what I'm saying?
Like, right.
That's the only way it could have ever been any better. It was the most perfect, like if you were writing a movie, it was the most perfect nail-biter happy ending you could have written.
It was. And it was astonishing. And I will ask you this. Has 2004, and we've talked about all the times we won the World Series, last 10 years, 3 World Championships, has this changed? Do you think, as Red Sox fans, now you mentioned your daughter. Your daughter only knows a world in which the Red Sox win the World. Every couple of years, we win the World Series.
I know.
That's how it is for the people who are young people now. Do you think that all of this success has changed? I'm not speaking for Red Sox fans in general. I'm thinking for you. How have you, Angie C., as a Red Sox fan, changed with all this success? How has it changed your perspective on the team and you as a Red Sox fan, if it has at all?
It has, in the way that I will never – there's an eternal – you know, we joke about it every spring training, truck day, that sort of thing. Hope springs eternal. And there will never be that moment as low as I was again on my knees. Like it'll never be that low again. My heart will never be that broken again because we have that. You know what I'm saying? I can always pull it out of my back pocket. Even, you know, this last, you know, 7-game losing streak we had, I would just look at my ticket from last year, my ticket stub from game 6.
Right.
And immediately feel okay. Like, it's okay. Even if we don't do anything this year, it's okay. You know? And I'm forever changed.
Yeah, and I very much am in sync with you because it's sometimes there's a part of me, and people are always, I was at the Red Sox game the other day, and I was, you know, screaming obscenities when Brock Holt couldn't. Well, I screamed them kind of quietly because there were children sitting around, so I didn't want to upset them. But it's the same thing. You will never lose that fire inside of you that's this. I'm convinced there's a part of my brain that still doesn't believe any of those World Series happened. I'm just convinced there's a part that refuses to accept it ever happened. Mm-hmm. But there's another part of me that just can't, you know, I can't get that anger up the way I used to. And that was the most awkward phrasing I think I've ever used. What I meant to say is I just can't conjure the pre-2004 anger for me was a quote-unquote asked to leave the house kind of anger. I mean, it was a real bad anger, and it really, you know, and it made me miserable. There'd be games my dad would always say, you know, these players have gone home to their mansions and their, you know, 19-year-old girlfriends, and you're sitting here punching the wall and breaking your fists and whatnot. And I can't help it, Dad. It's just the way I am. And it is. There's always that part of me, but I just can't find myself. You know, I watch Johnny Gomes strike out or a key moment come to the plate, and I say to myself, fucking, you know, not even 6 or 7 months ago, I mean, this guy was changing my life for the better. You know, the team was changing my life for the better again. I can't be angry towards them. You know, I can be upset that things don't work out, but I'll never have that anger I used to have.
Right. Well, I think that goes back to, like I was saying, the ancestry of being a Red Sox fan and carrying that in our DNA. Like, the slate was wiped clean, you know, and so that anger that we carried in our very genes, in our cells on a cellular level, is gone. So you can only get so mad. I mean, you know, I go back to that 86 series. I mean, that affected my love life. Like, that affected everything. Like, you know, growing up as a female in Boston, or I, you know, like, you either sink or swim early, you know? Uh-huh. I mean, for me, I was very lucky. I'm the oldest of four, and I was, you know, I was, obviously I was a girl, but my dad was, you know, took me under his Red Sox wing early. I mean, I was allowed to stay up late to watch Yaz's, you know, 3000th, and, you know, so I was indoctrinated in whatever that word is, really early, and so I didn't have to then learn later, as a lot of Boston women do, that to go along, get along, you're going to have to become a sports fan.
Gotcha.
You know, because it absolutely affects the entire town. Like you said, walking around like Omega Man, like, you know, when there's a deep loss, your boss is going to be pissed. The person at the bank is going to be pissed. The person that's picking you up is going to be pissed. Like, it, you know, it affects everything. So you better get on board, you know?
This town's going to suck tomorrow, man. We got to...
But people outside of, you know, big sports towns don't get that the same way, you know, because they, you know, have other shit going on, like sunshine in December or whatever. You know, there's a lot of things to be miserable about in New England. That's why we have sports teams, and that's why we're such huge sports fans, you know.
Well, if I asked you to rank, now you have a child, you have a deep-seated love for the Pixies, but if I asked you, if I asked you to rank where the, let's call it the two, let's stick with just 2004, not the last 10 years, but if we ask you just to rank 2004 and where it stands in the greatest moments of your lifetime, how do you rank them? Does it go daughter, Red Sox winning World Series, and then from there?
Pretty much.
That's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's top five. It's always top five. That doesn't change.
It's got to be.
You know, I think that it was just, you know, it was the miracle to end all miracles. It was the great convergence of, you know, the planets aligning. I mean, all those things happened at the same time, and it was just the most perfect year of my life, you know? So, yeah.
We're living in magical times.
Yep.
We are. Well, that's all I have for you in terms of my questions. Are there any other words of wisdom, any other parting pieces you want to leave us with, or... should we just stay correct and make sure we tune into DJ NGC on 100.7? Now, what is your is there a permanent time we can hear you?
Well, I'm on Mix as well. Just FYI, I'm
You're
usually
everywhere.
On Mix. You know, it varies on the weekends when I'm on there. But ZLX, I'm on every Saturday morning, 6 to 10 a.m. That's mine.
Gotcha.
And then you will also find me most Sundays on noon to five, and then I fill in for various day parts as needed. So, but you will always find me Saturday morning.
Excellent.
6 to 10. So.
Excellent. That's good to hear. I thank you very much for your time.
No, this was so my pleasure. I can't even tell you. Like, you know, telling that story never gets old, ever. And it is one of those things, like, there are several stories that we, as our particular generation, will tell in the same way, you know, our parents' generation talked about where they were when Kennedy was shot, where they were when they walked on the moon. You know, for us, it's, you know, things like 9/11, obviously, but it's, you know, where were you when the Red Sox won the World Series. Where were you?
Excellent.
You know, during that time frame.
And talk about going from the outhouse to the penthouse. You literally went, and I'm going to say it again, from your knees in a bar in Vegas to the penthouse, to being to being present in 2013 when the Red Sox won the World Series. That chart, that put that on a chart and smoke it. That is the, that's the evolution right there. There it is.
It's the most perfect evolution there is.
It's fantastic. Chew on that, Planet of the Apes. We got a better evolution story for you. DJ Angie C, it's always a pleasure. Listen to her on the radio. Follow her on Twitter at DJ Angie C. And it is always our pleasure. Please come back again when we do our 10-year anniversary for 2013. In 10 years, we'll be in touch. But until then, hopefully we'll keep speaking, and we thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Fred.